History tells us that wealthy democracies don't die, and that no democracy that survived for 50 years has died. Stephen Levitsky has studied democracies around the world, and he says democracy in America is backsliding right before our eyes. Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt are government professors at Harvard. They wrote the bestseller, How Democracies Die. And in their new book, Tyranny of the Minority, they say that in 24 hours from January 5th to January 6th of 2021, we witnessed the promise and the peril of democracy in America. Levitsky says January 5th showed the promise when the state of Georgia elected an African-American, Raphael Warnock, and a Jewish-American, John Ossoff, to the Senate for the first time.
This was, in our view, an indicator of just how far the United States has come to building a truly multiracial democracy, something that we've aspired to for a long time but hadn't quite gotten there.
So that fact coexists with what happened January 6th.
It coexists with what happened on January 6th, but it also, I think, is intimately related. The assault on American democracy, which I think surprised many of us, is in many respects a reaction against the extraordinary progress that we've made in our march towards building a truly multiracial democracy. It's a reaction against multiracial democracy.
When we saw what was happening at the Capitol under siege, with the attackers breaking windows and beating Capitol Police and on the hunt through the halls of Congress, it looked like something we might see in the news from some authoritarian country far away, not here. So why is American democracy under such threat right now? And some people will need convincing that it really is under threat.
Well, I should point out, first of all, American democracy is not dead yet. American democracy has not died. It has backslid. Freedom House, for example, has an annual Global Freedom Index, scores every country from zero, which is North Korea, to 100. A decade ago, the United States had a score of 92, which was solidly democratic, a little lower than Scandinavia, but right up there with UK and Japan, Italy, Germany, Canada. Today, the U.S. score is down from 92 to 83, which puts us in a tie with Romania and below Argentina. And that may seem shocking to some listeners, but when you have widespread efforts to restrict access to the ballot, when you have widespread violent threats against election workers, against prosecutors, and when you have an effort by a sitting president of the United States to overturn the results of an election, you fall to the point where Freedom House considers you less democratic than Argentina, because those things don't happen in Argentina.
For the United States, a lot of people didn't see it coming. Why has it?
That's a great question. I think the principal reason is this transition to a multiracial democracy in which a dominant ethnic group, a long dominant ethnic group, loses not only its majority status, but its status on the social hierarchy, its dominant status in society. That is a transition that no other democratic society has ever undergone.
Caucasian men you're talking about.
Yeah. Talking about white Christians, and the speed and the extent to which long established social hierarchies have been challenged in the 21st century has been stunning. Today, for the first time in history, the percentage of African Americans in Congress is equal to the percentage of African Americans in the population. We have made extraordinary progress, and many Trumpist voters feel like the country that they grow up in is being taken away from them. And that's a powerful sense of threat. That's not just disagreeing with healthcare policy or foreign policy. And that, we believe, is what has radicalized the base of the Republican Party.
If you've been comfortable under the old system, is there reason to feel uncomfortable or threatened now?
It's all relative in a sense. Some Americans, to be sure, are objectively worse off, are living in a state of economic insecurity that either they or perhaps their parents didn't live through. So it's not only about social and cultural change. There's an economic component to what's going on as well. But there are many Americans who are objectively doing okay, but whose group's dominant status has been changed and who feel a sense of resentment about that.
So the idea of change itself is a threat.
Yeah. This is not a new thing. Throughout history, steps towards greater inclusion and greater equality have always generated conservative reactions. But I think it's been a much more fierce reaction than any of us anticipated. As soon as you get someone in power who has both the will and the capacity to manipulate the rules, you can do a lot of damage, even under the Constitution. An example that we point to is Hungary. Viktor Orban, he hasn't arrested anybody. He doesn't have any blood on his hands. And yet, by the books, he has, quote-unquote, legally tilted the playing field against the opposition in a way that has now unambiguously created an authoritarian regime. So you do not need to call out the tanks. You don't necessarily need to toss out the Constitution to manipulate the rules and slide your country into authoritarianism. It's reached another level under Donald Trump because he's an authoritarian figure. He's someone who cannot accept defeat. He's someone who is willing to break the law. It shows very little commitment to the Constitution. And he has said that he is willing and able to call in the army under the Insurrection Act to repress protesters. So this is a guy who's not hiding his authoritarianism. And Republican leaders know that. Most Republican leaders in private are disgusted with that, have a problem with that.
But
they're unwilling to stand up to him.
Because
and the Republican base has radicalized to a point where it is politically costly for any Republican to oppose Trump. Most Republicans are just regular politicians trying to get ahead. Get ahead means they want to be Speaker of the House like Kevin McCarthy, or they want to regain a Senate majority like Mitch McConnell, or maybe they want to stave off a primary challenger. Maybe they just don't want to deal with the wrath of the base, people shouting at them in airports like Lindsey Graham.
Right, but the base isn't that big. I mean, where does the fear come from? A
couple of places. One is in many places and at times it is now big enough to win a primary. And so that heavily affects the calculation of many Republicans. But there's something much, much darker at work as well, which is that an increasing number of Republican figures fear violent threats if they openly oppose Trump. So we're already drifting into the realm of authoritarianism if our politicians' behavior is being driven by fear of violence.
Would America be in this position with the threats it has to democracy right now if it hadn't been for Donald Trump?
I think Trump has accelerated the process, but the MAGA base has been moving in this direction for a while. We've seen this sort of radicalization.
Even before MAGA was MAGA.
Before MAGA was MAGA. Before MAGA, we had the Tea Party, which is very much the base of MAGA, which was similarly beginning to flirt with violence, beginning to flirt with treating, at that time, President Obama as the enemy. So the Republican Party was radicalizing anyway.
So you look at countries where there have been thriving or at least stable democracies that have then unraveled partially or wholly. How does that inform us here?
Well, look, Germans still know what it's like to lose a democracy. My fear is that Americans don't know the costs of losing a democracy.
So what's the way out then? So what's the way ahead?
For democracy to survive, political parties on both sides of the aisle must renounce violence and they must break ties. They must wash their hands of any extremist forces that challenge democracy. We have a long tradition in the United States of working to make our system more democratic. So there are a whole set of reforms that would get us a long way towards being ultimately a more secure democracy. We recommend abolition of the Electoral College, which makes us the only presidential democracy in the world where the loser of a presidential election can win the presidency. We recommend term limits on the Supreme Court. Every other established democracy in the world has either a retirement age or term limits for Supreme Court justices. We recommend a series of measures to make it easier for Americans to register and exercise the right of suffrage.
Stephen Levitsky with Daniel Ziblatt is the author of the book Tyranny of the Minority. Thank you so much, Professor Levitsky.
Thanks, Lisa.